evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington, and here are some of the stories we are covering today, Tuesday, April 2nd, 2019. The editor of Al-Watan newspaper accuses South Sudan's media authority of targeting journalists.
We as a newspaper, our documentations are up to date. But the media authority as a regulator should contact all the newspapers and not just Al-Watan.
And Sudanese protesters plan for a 1 million continental march in Khartoum and New York on Saturday.
We plan this Saturday, 6th of April, for a big march here in New York City. And also, we have the biggest march planned to be in the capital of Sudan, Khartoum.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The editor-in-chief of the Arabic daily Al-Watan newspaper says he has been receiving death threats from unknown individuals in Juba. Michael Real Christopher says his life has not been easy in the capital since South Sudan media authority suspended his paper last week. Christopher accuses the media authority of targeting Al-Watan for its reporting on the Sudan protests. He spoke to me in Arabic, and we are voicing over his responses in English.
I left Juba for personal reasons. I left to seek medical help, and there were also threats to my life coming from unknown people, and I thought it wise to leave the country for a while.
You're saying you are getting some threats from groups. Who are the people who are threatening you?
When I was in Juba, I kept receiving phone calls from unknown people who kept threatening me and also threatening to shut down my newspaper. Before I left Juba, there was a workshop by the media authority, and all the security organs attended it, and the director for media at the National Security made it clear that the security will close Michael's newspaper and we will not leave Michael. I knew there were some individual initiatives by security operatives who are out frustrating journalists in the country.
The media authority has been saying that you did not register. They told you to renew your registration so that you can operate, but you refused. Is that true?
We as a newspaper, our documentations are up to date. But the media authority as a regulator should contact all the newspapers and not just Al-Watan. After the security threats were received from unknown individuals, media authority wrote to us, suspending our operations for 1 month. We submitted valid documents, but we were surprised that the media authority targeted us and other groups in the country.
Tell us a little bit about your relationship with the media authority. We understand that there was a time they wrote a warning letter to you to stop reporting about the protest in Sudan. How did that end?
Yes, what happened was that I received a letter from Sapana and another person called John, and they instructed me to stop writing about Sudan, and they told me I am exposing myself to problems. They told me that if I continued writing, they would stand in my way. They asked me to apologize, but I refused. Then I started receiving death threats and intimidations. Now, they have shut down the newspaper, but they have failed to kill me. But I am sure they will do that once I return to Juba.
With this happening in South Sudan, what is your assessment of the media environment in South Sudan?
Wallahi, the environment of the media in South Sudan is faced with a lot of issues, including the way authorities who handle the media behave. Some of them behave like chiefs or pastoralists who don't know how to interact with the media. And this has affected the work of the media. South Sudan had 15 newspapers. Today, we have only 4 newspapers because of the harassment of journalists by security operatives.
Are you going back to South Sudan to continue operating there?
Wallahi, because of the current situation, I can't return to South Sudan. I need to stay here for some time, but I will go back to continue reporting about the mistreatments in South Sudan.
When you were leaving the country or when you got some threats, did you report to the authorities? For instance, the Ministry of Information, which works closely with the media authority, did you report to the Ministry of Information?
As the family of the Al Watan newspaper and as the editor-in-chief, I will write a complaint to the Ministry of Justice and the Ministry of Information to report the behavior of the media authority personnel who act like the security operatives, and it is affecting the image of the country because the behavior of the media authority personnel are there to achieve the agenda of individuals. We hope our complaint will be addressed if there are laws in the country.
You are just one of the Arabic newspapers being threatened in Juba. How many other new Arabic newspapers are still operating in South Sudan?
We are 2 newspapers, Al Watan and Al Mukif. The rest were shut down.
That was Michael Riel Christopher, editor of Al Watan newspaper. He was speaking with me via WhatsApp from Cairo on Monday. Activists in Sudan are touting what they call a multi-continental million-person protest against Sudanese President Omar al-Bashir on Saturday. The protest will take place simultaneously in Khartoum and New York. It coincides with the 34th anniversary of the April 6, 1995 ouster by the military of another Sudanese leader, Jafar Mohamed Nimeiry. Demonstrations against President Bashir's government first began over fuel shortages and high food prices, but now the protesters want Mr. Bashir to step aside. Alamin Shingari is a member of the Political Bureau of the 27 November Movement. He tells my colleague James Batty that the unified message of Saturday's protest is the demand for Bashir to step down.
We plan this Saturday, 6th of April, for a big march here in New York City, starting from the famous square there in New York. And also, we have the biggest march planned to be in the capital of Sudan, Khartoum. That is on the same day of the uprising of April 6, 1985, which was against President dictator Jafar Nimeiry, maybe 35 years ago. And now we are planning to do the same march again against military dictatorship.
What is the significance of this April 6 to the other protests that have been going on?
The other protests, in some extent, was in local areas. There wasn't a big one for all the people in the capital in Khartoum. But this one is open for all Sudanese. The other significant also, we are pushing to have the million person walk out. That will be the biggest one of all.
As you know, the protest began over fuel shortages and the hiking food prices. President Bashir was speaking Monday, and he said that the demands that the protesters have been making are legitimate. In fact, he's calling on the opposition to join the national dialogue.
This is one of the tactics of this military dictator. Sometimes he changed the rhetoric, changed the way he talks to the people, and sometimes he start to, as if he is accepting what the people demand from him. But actually, after 30 years and 3 decades, we come to understand the way he talk and the way he built his policies and how he delivered the policies. So there is not any kind of trust from us on his government or anyone who can represent him. We feel that the damage which had been happening in Sudan during all these 30 years is so big and so huge to the extent that we don't feel any partial change in the government will make a good result of it. We think that the whole system should be restructured and change should be taken from its roots to build a new system. If 30 years is not enough for you to make the good change, or at least to maintain what was there, then why we should give you another 30 years or another 10 years to play?
As you know, the Sudanese security forces have clamped down heavily on the protesters in Khartoum. Are you not concerned that this Saturday's march will be met by violence?
We know that this is their strategy to push us, all the demonstrators and all the people of Sudan. They want to push us to the other side, not the peaceful way. We keep telling the people, never think about any violent way against the government. Do not give them the tool and the reason to use the arms against us. And we don't want to have any bloodshed in Sudan. We want and we will continue in a very civil and very peaceful way.
Thank you very much again, sir. We are so happy to speak with you.
Thank you. You're most welcome.
That was Alamine Sangray, a member of the Political Bureau of the November 27 movement. He was speaking to my colleague James Batty earlier today. As Sudan's government seeks to quell months of anti-government protest that have left more than 50 people dead, a Sudanese graffiti artist is honoring demonstrators killed in the protest. Naba Mohiyadin has the story for VOA from Khartoum.
Sudanese graffiti artist Asil Diab lives in Qatar, but earlier this year returned to the country of her birth. Diab came to honor protesters who were killed in Sudan's months-long anti-government demonstrations.
Initially, I wanted to participate in the protests in Sudan. It took a long time for me to convince my parents to come to Sudan and participate in the revolution. And once I got here, I heard a lot of stories about the martyrs, and it was very emotional, and I just had to do something about that.
Diab began visiting families of protesters who were killed and painting their portraits as a memorial on the walls of the buildings where they once lived. Relatives warmly welcomed Diab into their homes. Abu Bakr Umar's 24-year-old son, Abdul Azim, was killed in January, allegedly shot by police during a protest. He says Diab's painting has renewed the memory of Abdul Azim's becoming a martyr. Whenever he sees the painting, adds Umar, he feels like Abdul Azim is still here with them. Diab also paints those killed in earlier protest clashes, such as Adila Mustafa's son, Musab, who was shot at 8:26 during 2013 protests. She said that when the painting was made, she wasn't there. When she saw it for the first time, she was surprised. It's a painful memory for her, says Mustafa. At least 50 people have been killed in Sudan since protests broke out in late December over price hikes and fuel shortage. The demonstrations quickly morphed into calls for President Omar al-Bashir to leave power. A pioneer of Sudan's modern art, Rashid Diab, no relation, says Asil Diab's work is empowering the protest movement. He says that freedom of expression in painting is very important. It gives the actual value to the revolutionary act. It fuels the revolutionary act, increases its power, flame, and importance, he says. It creates the pillars of a future civilized presence. Diab's portraits of protest victims can be found in Khartoum and in Omdurman and Bahri, Sudan's other major cities. At the street level, Diab says her graffiti portraits spur discussions about how unarmed protesters became casualties.
And once I start painting in the streets, people as well, the audience, they stop and ask. It connects me with the families and the families with the public, and there's an immediate connection between everyone that walks by the artwork.
As Diab prepared to leave Sudan this month, she visited the families of the victims and gave some of the portraits a touch-up. Diab says she hoped that on her next visit to Sudan, there will be fewer portraits for her to paint. Naba Mohiyadin for VOA News, Khartoum.
You're tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, we take a look at the continuing crisis of Ebola in the Democratic Republic of Congo. That story is coming up right after this break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what do you fear losing the most?
The peace that we enjoy in my country. Ghana is a very peaceful place, and we are well noted for that, and I want it to continue.
Losing most my friends, my family members. When it comes to death, I fear losing anyone close to me.
I fear losing my peace of mind. I fear losing love from people. Sometimes you are there and you fear that people are not really showing that love. That's the two things I fear most.
I fear losing my life because it is important, and it helped me to assist the life of other people, because the life is most important to the community, and we love each other.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. It's time for our Tuesday health segment. And today, we are talking about the challenges of containing Ebola in the Democratic Republic of Congo. The World Health Organization says insecurity and community mistrust in the neighboring Democratic Republic of Congo's North Kivu province are major impediments to international efforts to bring the Ebola outbreak under control. Latest official figures put the number of Ebola cases in the Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo at 1,089, including 679 deaths. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from WHO headquarters in Geneva.
The World Health Organization reports an increase in the number of Ebola cases. Last week, it says, there were 72 recorded cases compared to 56 cases of the deadly disease the week before. WHO Assistant Director General for Emergencies Response, Ibrahima Sosfal, attributes the rise to insecurity and violence in the North Kivu hotspots of Butembo and Katwa. He says that has caused major disruptions in the ability of health workers to respond to the disease. As a consequence, he says people in contact with infected individuals are unprotected. He says contacts cannot get vaccinated or be followed for signs of illness. He says burials are not conducted safely, resulting in some mourners becoming infected. Speaking on a phone line from Butembo, Fall says the difficulty of getting people to understand that Ebola is a problem further complicates the situation.
They have so many other problems like insecurity, being killed for many years, access to water, education, and so on. So it takes time to convince them that Ebola is a real problem for them. And that's why we have started this community dialogue, to listen to them, to understand the problem, and working with development partners like World Bank and UNICEF to address the other problems they have been having for many, many years.
As part of this outreach program, Fall says 40 young people from the local communities have been trained and are now part of the burial and disinfection team. He says the response to this and other measures requested by the community are beginning to have a positive impact. The WHO estimates it will take at least 6 months before it gains control of the Ebola outbreak. It says it expects cases will continue to increase until full response measures can be put in place in all vulnerable areas. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
A South Sudanese military court today charged General Stephen Boy Rolnyang with treason and disobeying standing military orders. Prosecutor Captain Agustino Chol says General Boy failed to obey military directives last year. General Boy is the first senior military officer to be charged with treason in South Sudan. Wake Simon Wudu has the details for VOA from Juba.
A six-judge panel comprised of senior military generals presided over today's hearing, in which General Boy is being tried under the SPLA Act of 2009. South Sudan military spokesman Brigadier General Lulwai Kwong says Boy was arrested after he was declared a rebel by the state.
In this case, Major General Boy is being accused of having attempted rebellion against the government. And in that case, he did not succeed. He was surrounded, he was fought, and was captured. And that's why he's being subjected to a legal process. Was it actually a rebellion, or was it a rebellion?
Boy first appeared in court last February, but his defense team protested the appointment of junior judges to preside over the trial and demanded that officers with ranks similar or higher than Boy's preside over his trial. After President Salva Kiir reconstituted the panel of judges as requested, the hearing resumed today. While the court session in the morning was open to the public, the judges held a closed-door session in the afternoon per Section 42 of SPLA Act 2009. Journalists, relatives of the accused and other observers were asked to leave the courtroom. The South Sudan Army insists Boy's trial is a normal disciplinary measure in accordance with the SPLA Act 2009. Kwong says he could not say how many high-ranking officers have been arraigned in court for killings, rape and looting. When asked about a case in Kobe Village in which soldiers allegedly raped women in 2017, Kwong says the government is still investigating the matter.
The case is still going on, simply because the complainants are not being active. And you cannot appear before a court without someone complaining against you. These people are still in detention, awaiting trials.
When asked about an incident in which soldiers were accused of detaining, blindfolding, assaulting, and undressing ceasefire monitors who were investigating an alleged violation of the peace deal outside of Juba town, Kwong said the suspects involved in the case were security agents, not soldiers.
An investigation was instituted. It was found that nobody was undressed. There are some big jackets. They were overdressed. Some of them were overdressed. And in the process of removing some of the jackets, it was termed as undressing.
General Boy is the first senior South Sudanese military officer to be tried in a court of law for taking up arms against the state since the conflict broke out in late 2013. For VOA News, I'm Waki Simon Wudu in Juba.
Algerian President Abdelaziz Bouteflika's office has issued a statement saying the president will step down before his term officially ends on April 28. It's not clear who will take over for him in the interim, but the country's constitution stipulates that the Speaker of the Parliament will do so until elections are organized. Lesha Bryan reports for VOA from Paris.
The protests have been largely peaceful, but on Friday there were reports of violence that left at least one person dead. The state-run Algerian press service reported 56 police officers and 7 citizens were wounded in the capital, Algiers, and several dozen protesters were arrested. Other media described witness accounts of police hitting demonstrators with batons and lobbing tear gas at them. The anti-government protests that erupted in several cities and towns after Friday prayers are the biggest in years. Protesters oppose President Abdelaziz Bouteflika running for a 5th term in office, but there is also anger at the country's high joblessness and alleged government corruption. Bouteflika turned 82 on Saturday and is reportedly undergoing medical tests in Geneva. Rarely seen in public since suffering a stroke in 2013, he is paralyzed and in a wheelchair.
Les Algériens se sont sentis réellement à la fois humiliés et infantilisés.
Sorbonne University North Africa expert Khadija Mohsen-Finan says Algerians feel both humiliated and infantilized by being expected to vote for Bouteflika once again, regardless of the true state of his health. The political structure is aging, she says, noting the president has been part of Algeria's power system since its independence from France in 1962. 1992. Since taking office in 1999, President Bouteflika is credited for restoring peace in Algeria following a brutal civil war that killed upwards of 100,000 people. The so-called Arab Spring that began in neighboring Tunisia in 2011 and swept across the region left little mark on Algeria. Oil dollars helped the government maintain stability, and few Algerians wanted to revisit their violent past. This past week, Algeria's prime minister recalled the chaos that followed the Arab Spring uprising in Syria. But oil prices have plummeted since 2011, and Algeria's economy is struggling. Today, nearly one-third of Algerians under 30 are jobless, and the country's largely young population has little memory of the civil war.
Ils peuvent dire très bien, ce n'est pas Bouteflika pour des raisons de santé.
Analyst Mohsen Finan, who co-authored a new book on dissent in North Africa, says the country's ruling power is divided on the way forward, while demonstrations driven by social media are unified in opposing Bouteflika's re-election bid. She says Algeria's regime might still present an alternative candidate to the president. The big question is whether the public will accept it. Lisa Bryant for VOA News, Paris.
That's our show for this Tuesday. We now leave you with the song Roger Miller by Pepe Kale.
La Guinée Moussou.
Been listening to Pepe Kale with the song Roger Miller, praising the former Cameroonian soccer star Roger Miller. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for listening. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Roger Miller, Roger Miller in Dondo, hey, Bana Betoya, Dondo Cabasella, Chipalo Chicosa Cosu, hey. Manubike, Funde, Fede, Maka, Maka, hey, one of